Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Tuesday, October 29, 2024. 34 teachers from Upper Nile State are seeking justice after their contracts were terminated.
So when we ask them, they say, any teacher whom you see is name or not a fear of the board, make sure that you have been terminated. And then we ask, how come you have been terminated while you are on leave? We were on holidays and we expect to be taken back to our workplace. They say no.
And a church leader in Eastern Equatoria State says the welfare of civil servants is crucial as the country struggles to find money for salaries.
So from the point of institution, I think there is going to be a breakdown. In other places, you see, when you don't give me my right, I become very emotional, and then this is where the temper will fly and confusion will come in there.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A group of 34 teachers are demanding $205,000 from the non-profit, the Melut Development Committee, after their contracts were terminated. A county education supervisor in Melut County of Upper Nile State says the halt in South Sudan's oil production affected the group's ability to pay the teachers. For VOA News, Dennis Logonyi reports from Juba.
The 34 teachers are seeking justice after the Melut County Development Committee terminated their contracts. Melut County recruited 100 teachers in 2022 who were to teach in 10 primary and 3 secondary schools in Wun Amum, Panomdi, Agordi, Thiangrial, and Pariak Payams in the county. One of the teachers, Amuk Pubol Min, says they were terminated while they were on leave and no reason was given for letting them go.
We 34 teachers, we find ourselves as we have been terminated. So when we ask them, they say any teacher whom you see is name or not a fear on the board, make sure that you have been terminated. And then we ask, how come you have been terminated while you are on leave? We were on holidays and we expect to be taken back to our workplace. They say no, that is it. It is not bad when you are terminated, but you're supposed to be terminated with the document. Where is the document showing that you have terminated us?
Wai Akol is the county education director for Melut County. He says some teachers the Melut Development Committee hired are still teaching at various schools in Upper Nile State.
Not all of them have been terminated, but some of them have been terminated according to the teacher code of conduct that can be taken place. And at the same time, through the end of the contract, a contract can be signed only for one term, according to the end of the term of the education season. So the term determination can come every year and can be terminated. You have to renew your contract, it depends on the behavior that has been seen to you. If there is no renewal of contract, you cannot be recruited again.
Amuk says the Melut Development Committee did not issue a warning or explained why their contracts were ended.
We don't know the reason why are we terminated, and we spent 7 months. It is a dilemma. We have tried in a peaceful manner and they don't want even to recognize us. We are the people like them.
The Melut Development Committee depends on proceeds from South Sudan's oil sales to pay teacher salaries. Wai says South Sudan's oil shutdown affected the committee's ability to pay the teachers back salaries.
Those who are present now, they receive nothing. Since the opening of the school, they only receive 2 months, and the rest of the months are not paid because of the oil revenue that we have benefited from 3% within the county. So now, these teachers that were present now, they receive nothing.
Arup says they have tried all avenues with no success and now want the court to help them.
Since 15th of July, to date is more than 3 months. We are not getting justice. That's why we have decided to come out publicly. South Sudan is one of the law-abiding nations on earth. Why others are trying to be mistreated, even if they are in a law-abiding nations? What have we done wrong?
According to the Petroleum Management Act, 2% of net oil revenue goes to the states, while 3% is for development projects in the oil-producing communities. An Auditor General report of 2021 revealed that over $50 million meant to be paid to oil-producing states was misappropriated. Melut County has about 5,000 oil wells with a capacity to produce more than 120,000 barrels a day. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we move to Torit on money matters. Civil servants in eastern Equatorial State say they are forced to take up extra jobs to feed their families. Some community leaders in the state are calling on the government of South Sudan to pay long-delayed salaries to avoid a breakdown in the country's institutions. For VOA News, Kaltuma Vanessa reports from Torit.
Saturnino Amato Ohure, a teacher at Torit One Primary School, says he also works as a security guard because the government has not paid teachers for almost a year.
In Warrior, we have 3 shifts, morning shift, afternoon shift, and night shift. So if I have a morning shift, then I will go and come back in the afternoon to teach from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. And then if I'm going to work in the afternoon, I will go to school in the morning to teach. Because of these conditions, I am bearing to move between 2 jobs. It is not only the teachers who are working there. All other civil servants are also working.
Reverend John Wajaras, a parish priest at Torit Catholic Church, says the South Sudan government should transform the lives of its citizens.
A civil servant have gone almost for 9 months, and that is what I call a gap between work satisfaction and then the issue of salaries. It is not a normal thing, so it affects the order. If I come late, you don't pay me. So even my boss, what do you say? You cannot give me now directives because what I am expecting from you, you don't even give me. So from the point of institution, I think there is going to be a breakdown. In other places, you see, when you don't give me my right, I become very emotional, and then this is where the temper will fire and confusion will come in there. But I hope we cannot reach to that level. South Sudanese are very patient, but I hope the patience will not run out also.
The chairperson of a civil society group in Eastern Equatorial State says the government stands to lose its workforce because employees haven't been paid. Charles Onen says the state and national government are the biggest employers in the country.
For any country to develop, the manpower must be effectively supported and motivated. The workforce has to be participating maximally to be able to produce, to be able to implement policies. But now look at this. If our workforce, they are withdrawing from offices, we will not be seeing any progress in terms of development of our nation. Look at what they call GDP. We don't have any GDP, gross domestic product. And that is a measure and indicator of a country developing, but we don't see it, the GDP. Secondly, we will see that many people will not come back to work next year. The projection is that next year, people are going to be serious to look for another avenue of living. If the trend of not paying salaries monthly continues. And finally, let us not be surprised that we will see a lot of crimes increasing.
Peter Lokuju Loterimoi, Eastern Equatorial State Minister of Finance, says the government is working to pay civil servants who have been waiting for too long.
The National Ministry of Finance Planning is the one dealing with all the resources of this country. He knows how to get the money from anywhere, and then can solve the problem of the civil servant. They are going to pay arrears that is going to pay, which is not yet paid. I think in the program of the government, it's serious about it. It's looking ways how to solve the problem of civil servant.
Loterimoi says South Sudan is battling severe floods, a collapsing currency, and the shutdown of oil revenue. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa reporting from Eastern Equatorial State Capital, Torit.
From Torit, we move to the United States, where it's almost 1 week left for Americans to head to the polls. Kwame Ofori speaks to some South Sudanese at home and in the diaspora on how they feel about the U.S. elections and how it impacts them. Our second guest is Jock Madut Jock, who is a South Sudanese-born American based in Syracuse, New York.
On the impact of U.S., the outcome of U.S. elections, on South Sudan, which is my birth country and the country I love, I can say as far as a single president can decide what happens in South Sudan regarding the American foreign policy, I think it doesn't make a difference who wins these elections, because the U.S. and South Sudan over the last decade or so have had rocky relationships on account of the behavior of the leaders of South Sudan. And it seems the position of the U.S. government, at least the foreign policy and security docket, is that South Sudan, especially its leadership, has really betrayed the people of South Sudan. And I think whoever comes to the White House come January 2025, we can only hope for changes in the way South Sudan is being treated by the U.S. government.
You spoke about policies that are affecting South Sudanese back home and the country South Sudan. But with you, what are some of the policies being shaped by both parties, or both candidates, I should say, that resonate with you as a South Sudanese living here in the U.S.?
Well, I think policies that are geared towards ratcheting down the level of conflict in the world, such as trying to solve the conflict in Yemen, conflict in Sudan, conflict in Gaza, and now in Lebanon and Israel, I think these policies do have quite a bit of impact on South Sudan, directly or indirectly. For example, South Sudan has to sell its oil, and the more the conflict goes on in Sudan and other parts of the Middle East, the more negative it will be for South Sudan in terms of its ability to export its oil, but also in terms of dealing with refugees and insecurity that comes with the war raging next door to South Sudan in the north, in Sudan. So I think those policies really do concern us, and we watch them carefully, especially on the front of trying to bring peace to Sudan and end the humanitarian crisis there.
And, you know, South Sudan was scheduled to have its own elections this year. How does the U.S. elections make you feel, considering, you know, you couldn't experience, or South Sudanese couldn't experience their own elections in South Sudan this year?
Oh, yeah, it is a very painful part of the South Sudan's recent past. We were supposed to have elections in 2015, but that was wrecked by the outbreak of the war in 2013, and we lost an opportunity there. And then we were supposed to get elections soon after the first interim period when the war was resolved, but the 2016 erupted into another level of war, and then another peace agreement was signed in 2018, hoping that within 6 years we would have an election, but came 2024, and that election was also postponed, and the lifespan of the current transitional government extended for another 24 months. So when the world is conducting their own elections, while South Sudan keeps postponing our elections, it really is a painful experience to have, most particularly because as a new country, South Sudan has never had any democratic elections in its history, and we keep postponing them. And that's really just something that I think the new U.S. president should be able to discuss that with the leaders of South Sudan going forward.
That's Jock Madud Jock, South Sudanese analyst and professor of anthropology at Syracuse University in New York. He spoke with my colleague Kwame Ofori from Syracuse this past hour. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, UN's top diplomat speaks tough on the situation in Sudan. Find out more after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres called for decisive action on Monday to end the 18-month-long civil war in Sudan, where millions face starvation and have been displaced from their homes. Guterres said suffering is growing by the day as he expressed deep concern about the situation in the capital of North Darfur, El Fashir, where fighting has escalated since mid-April.
18 months have passed since brutal fighting erupted between the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces. The suffering is growing by the day, with almost 25 million people now requiring assistance. The people of Sudan are living through a nightmare of violence, with thousands of civilians killed and countless others facing unspeakable atrocities, including widespread rape and sexual assaults. In recent days, we have heard shocking reports of mass killings and sexual violence in villages in Al Jazeera State in the east of the country. They are also enduring a nightmare of hunger, as more than 750,000 people face catastrophic food insecurity and famine conditions take hold in displacement sites in North Darfur, while millions struggle to feed themselves every day. They are confronting a nightmare of disease, with cholera, malaria, dengue fever, measles, and rubella spreading fast. A nightmare of collapsed infrastructure, with vital health systems, transportation networks, water and sanitation systems, supply routes, and agricultural production grinding to a halt. A nightmare of displacement, the largest displacement crisis in the world, with more than 11 million people fleeing since April last year, including nearly 3 million who have crossed into neighboring countries. A nightmare of extreme weather, with nearly 600,000 people affected by heavy rains and floods this summer. And Sudan is once again rapidly becoming a nightmare of mass ethnic violence, in particular with the dramatic escalation of fighting in El Fashir. Madam President, we have consistently appealed to both sides to end the fighting. We face the serious possibility of the conflict igniting regional instability from Sahel to the Horn of Africa to the Red Sea.
That's UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres talking about the situation in Sudan. The International Organization for Migration warns Sudan's displacement crisis is worsening as increasing number of people flee fighting, hunger and sexual violence. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The war in Sudan, the world's largest displacement crisis, has uprooted more than 14 million people. The International Organization for Migration says 11 million have been displaced inside Sudan. This, says IOM Director General Amy Pope, is up by 200,000 just since September. Speaking from Port Sudan, she tells journalists in Geneva the number of people who have fled across borders as refugees has increased to 3.1 million. She says more than half of those displaced are women, and more than a quarter are children under the age of five.
Unfortunately, many of them have been forced to flee repeatedly. They have little access to shelter, they have little access to livelihoods, and getting their basic needs met has been very, very difficult. The scale of the displacement, the humanitarian needs are growing every day. Frankly, half of the population now needs help. People don't have access to shelter. They don't have access to clean drinking water. They don't have access to health care.
Pope warns disease is spreading fast, as is hunger, with one in every two Sudanese struggling to find enough food to survive. Meanwhile, the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Turk, condemns the escalating hostilities in Al Jazeera State, which he says is worsening the risk of attacks against civilians. His spokesperson, Saif Magango, says the rapid support forces reportedly have killed hundreds of people amid widespread looting in this region. He says the RSF also reportedly has detained and ill-treated civilians from targeted villages.
Further, there are reports of burning of crops at a time when over 25 million Sudanese are facing acute food insecurity because of the ongoing conflict. Destruction of crops in a region considered the country's breadbasket can only exacerbate an already catastrophic situation.
He says thousands of families reportedly have been displaced from Al Jazeera State because of the violence, adding to the already dire displacement crisis in the country. High Commissioner Turk is calling on leaders of both the RSF and Sudanese armed forces to promptly take measures to de-escalate the situation and to stop rights violations by their forces. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From Geneva, we move to Ghana, where the United States and Germany have launched a $40 million joint initiative, the Coastal States Stability Mechanism, across five West African states, focusing on countering terrorism and extremism. Unlike past military-driven efforts, the program emphasizes community-led developmental approaches to address the root causes of instability and promote good governance and economic development. Sinanu Todd reports from Yindi in Ghana.
At Yindi in northern Ghana, US and German delegates handed over police equipment to local leaders to mark the launch of a new initiative to protect communities from the growing threat of terrorism and extremism spilling over from the Sahel. The Coastal State Stability Mechanism, or CSSM, focuses on tackling the root causes of regional instability through community-led solutions, improved governance, and economic development, marking a shift away from the traditional military approach to conflict resolution. Before its launch, the program supported vulnerable communities by improving healthcare facilities, providing solar energy, and enhancing community leadership programs. Ann Witowski is U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Conflict and stabilization operations.
One might think just about security services for building security, but security is about more than that. It's about the whole community. It's about building resilient societies. And yes, of course, it is about the ability of the police to conduct their work and to do it in a way that that has the trust of the community, but it's about these other pieces as well.
Experts say violent extremists often exploit developmental gaps to radicalize communities. Ghana's National Security Interagency Coordinator, Baba Sayuti, explains that the CSSM partnership strengthens the nation's capacity to address these gaps and prevent terrorism.
So for us partnering with CSM, Coastal State Stability Mechanism, to be able to provide the needs whereby the state is not able to do it, is a way in order to reduce this kind of thing. That's why I'm saying that they are helping the first pillar, that is the prevention.
Despite these efforts, Ghana's Northeast Regional Minister, Yidana Zakaria, warns of visible signs of terrorist activity. Zakaria explained to delegates that northern Ghana's proximity to the Sahel makes it easy for suspicious individuals to enter the country under the guise of religious clerics or refugees seeking aid.
They come and go. Sometimes you don't even know where they stay. And we are worried about that. They are not necessarily beggars. They could also be gathering intelligence. The question is, how do they even get into the country? Because they don't have any document to show that they have come through approved entry points. That gives room for worry.
In Accra, the US and German ambassadors reassured local leaders of their commitment to using existing development programs, such as Germany's GIZ and the US Agency for International Development, to help build community resilience against these threats. They also indicated that more partners would soon join the CSSM initiative.
You can expect more partners to join the program, and that certainly is our goal. We're better when we work we're better when we're together. Each of us brings a certain set of experiences, types of resources to the table.
For the next 3 years, CSSM will operate in five coastal West African states: Benin, Ivory Coast, Ghana, Guinea, and Togo, in an effort to help defend these countries from the Sahel insurgencies. Sena Anutod, VOA News, Yindi, Ghana.
From Ghana, we move back to Washington, where President Joe Biden on Monday urged an end to the Middle East conflict after Israel struck Iran earlier Saturday in what Washington said was justified retaliation for a strike on Israel earlier this month. Biden also threw his weight behind a new Egyptian proposal for a two-day ceasefire. VOA's White House correspondent Anita Powell reports from Washington.
The brutal conflict in the Middle East needs to end, U.S. President Joe Biden said Monday, as Israel's operations in Gaza and Lebanon aimed at Iranian proxy groups followed its strike on military targets in Tehran over the weekend. Biden stopped to address the ongoing war as he cast his vote on Monday and threw his support behind a two-day ceasefire deal proposed by Egypt's leader.
We need a ceasefire. We should end this war. It should end, it should end, it should end.
U.S. allies agree. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer.
I am clear that Israel has the right to defend itself against Iranian aggression. I'm equally clear that we need to avoid further regional escalation and urge all sides to show restraint. Iran should not respond. We will continue to work with allies to de-escalate the situation across the region.
Less clear is the position of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who spoke to his nation's legislative body Monday.
This past Saturday, we carried out targeted strikes on dozens of military targets across Iran. We have proven, not for the first time, that Israel's long arm will reach any place from which a call to destroy Israel is made.
And Iran's foreign ministry spokesman, Ismail Baghi, said Monday, vaguely, that Tehran would respond.
We will use all tools available for a decisive and effective response to the Zionist regime's aggression. The type of our answer will be based on the type of the attack.
The U.S. State Department on Monday warned Iran not to respond to Israel's October 26th response to Iran's October 1st missile attack on Israel. Spokesman Matthew Miller warned that if Iran did respond, the U.S. would continue to defend Israel. And responding to concerns about the dire humanitarian situation, Miller spoke against an Israeli law that seeks to ban the United Nations Palestinian Refugee Agency.
They really play an irreplaceable role right now in Gaza, where they are on the front lines getting humanitarian assistance to the people they need it. There's nobody that can replace them right now in the middle of the crisis. So we continue to urge the government of Israel to pause the implementation of this legislation.
Israel's parliament overwhelmingly approved the measure on Monday, 92-10. Analysts aren't sure this cycle of violence between Iran, Iranian proxies, and Israel will stop. Jason Brodsky is policy director of United Against Nuclear Iran.
I think that the United States and its allies make these calls and warn Iran don't, but then Iran does. So I think that the U.S. has eroded deterrence with respect to the Islamic Republic. And I'm not really sure the leadership in Tehran takes these warnings seriously.
And Washington observers are asking, will this end before Biden becomes a lame duck president with next Tuesday's election? But for the people caught in the middle, a different question. Will we live to see the end? Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
Muzina. Muzina ditata. That's all from us here in Washington on this Tuesday, October 29, 2024. We'll leave you with Tabule Rosharo and the song Muzina. For more on our programs, visit www.voaafrica.com. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Cornelius, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Edi peve santu, musina ni tata zambeo, ya musina. Yo.
sala na katia lisanga na manda konanga ndaye.